speaker, Dr. Catherine Keatsman, is a project director of the Home Study, Helping Older Adults Maintain Independence, which examines how low-income older Californians with long-term care needs develop and sustain a network of care that enables them to remain safely in their homes. She also currently directs another project called the Community Health Innovations and Prevention for Seniors, the CHIPS Project, a CDC-funded comprehensive review of community-based programs designed to increase the uptake of clinical preventive services. At today's talk, I believe she will be discussing her involvement with the Home Study. So with that, I will go ahead and introduce, please welcome Dr. Keatsman. Hello. Will this be okay?
Let's see if we can get it back.
So are we completely off here?
It's my turn.
Oh!
There you go. We're live. So thank you, Charlene, and thank you. This is a hardcore audience that's hanging in there with us, so we really appreciate it. I thought, you know, if we're going to have a small quantity, it's going to be the quality of folks in the room that's going to matter. So I'm going to be looking. I'm going to be talking to you about a project where we've been looking at this dual eligible group that Jeff was just discussing, but we're looking at it from in this project from quite a different. We're taking quite a different approach. But these are the group that he alluded to who are soon going to be transitioning into under the California Coordinated Care Initiative into managed care. I'd like to acknowledge two of my co-authors in the room, Principal Investigator Dr. Stephen Wallace and Charlene Chang, stellar graduate student researcher who's been involved, closely involved with the participants and data collection for this project. Oh, there's my arrow. And I have no disclosures here. So we're very grateful to have the support of the SCAN Foundation to do this work. In late 2010, we launched this qualitative and longitudinal study, which we refer to as the Helping Older Adults Maintain Independence, or HOME study. And we took a few liberties with the acronym, but we felt like the word HOME really captures the essence of our project. So over the course of the first year of this project, we conducted in-depth interviews with a typical group of older adult dual eligibles in four counties in California. And again, these are those who are insured through both Medicare and Medi-Cal, which is the Medicaid program in California. And they were all receiving publicly financed support services in order to remain in their homes. And we also interviewed their paid and unpaid caregivers. And we wanted to learn more about how they managed to pull together a very complicated, in some cases, network of both formal and informal supports that address a range of their health and social care needs. And they're provided typically across a continuum of provider settings. So the home base may be directly in people's homes or in local community senior centers or in institutional settings, such as assisted living facilities. So in California, formal long-term services and supports programs include in-home supportive services, which pays for personal care services. It includes community-based adult services, which provide therapeutic services for seniors and respite for their families. The multipurpose senior services program, which provides enhanced case management and supplemental services. Other formal supports include nutrition programs, home-delivered meals, income assistance, transportation, and housing programs. So all of these various components really are critical to most of these very vulnerable folks. These formal services typically are supplementing, however, the bulk of care, which is provided typically by families, friends, neighbors, and you'll see the pets up there because as we learned in our first year, pets were really quite a big source of social support for many of these older adults who many are socially isolated. And often the older adults and their family members are really the ones that are really left with the task of arranging and managing this very disparate array of services. So that's just sort of the backdrop to give you a sense of the range of programs and services that we're looking at in this study. So we learned, we documented the experiences of these older adults in the first year, and they were going through a series of, well, state budget cuts, which really were interrupting and reducing and changing the availability of their supports. And we learned that most were really managing this very complex and fragile web of formal and informal supports, and they all shared a common determination to stay at home and to maintain their independence. Many of them were struggling with increasing disability and have physical and mental health needs that were, you know, quite unstable, sort of off and on, and one day was a good day and one day was not such a good day. So we took a qualitative approach to this study. As I mentioned before, I think I missed something. Let me back up one. Our main objectives, so that was the first wave, which I just tried to briefly sum up. We were really fortunate to get additional support from the Stand Foundation to continue to follow this group of dual eligibles, and we also recruited an additional group for the second wave of the home study. And we're following them as they're preparing to go through yet another series of changes. As Jeff mentioned, we have the California Coordinated Care Initiative. It's at this point, it's been a moving target in terms of the start date, but it's scheduled at this point to start as of April 1 in 2014, so that's, what, a few months from now. And in 8 counties, the dual eligibles are going to experience significant changes to their organization and delivery of their health and social care services. And so this plan, the so-called duals demonstration, is scheduled to transition them into a managed care plan that will be responsible for the delivery of both their medical care and their long-term services and support. So this is a huge change in the way that services are going to be integrated and delivered for this population. The ultimate goal of this initiative is to improve the care coordination, better integrate these services together, improve the quality of care for the individuals, and of course to also save the state of California some money. And there are a series of very important consumer decision points along the way. So as the first important point is that the majority of the folks who will be transitioning to this program will be passively enrolled, meaning that they're going to have to opt out if they want to still maintain their Medicare benefits outside of this new program. So that's the first choice that folks are going to have to make. Secondly, some of the counties are going to offer more than one managed care plan. And so they have to make a decision about which managed care plan to choose. And then even within that managed care plan, they will maybe have to make decisions about selecting a new primary care provider or perhaps some specialists. So there are a lot of decision points ahead for this group. So the main objectives of the current wave, the home study, are to continue to document how these folks are faring with their managing, their maintaining themselves at home, arranging for these health and social services that they need, with a special focus on their interactions with the acute and primary medical care systems. And we want to understand how they find out about and then respond to changes in their health and social care benefits. So we took a qualitative approach. We looked at folks. We are now about halfway through a 16-month period in which we're conducting 4 in-depth interviews with care recipients who are 65 years of age or over, and they receive at least Medicare and Medi-Cal and in-home supportive services. And they are able to effectively communicate in English or Spanish. We have bilingual interviewers, including Charlene here, who are collecting the data. And when available, we're also talking to their family or unrelated caregivers who provide care through the ISSS program. The first round of interviews are done in person, and then the follow-ups are conducted over the phone. And the interview guides that we've developed cover a standard sort of set of topics, but within each topic, we encourage the respondents to really give us their own words about their experiences, which is the essence of the qualitative approach. So in-home supportive services program, administrators are helping us recruit. They've helped us recruit in the 4 large California counties, and we have 37 cases enrolled in the study. Again, it's a consumer-directed program, and it's serving more than 430,000 Medi-Cal eligible adults, individuals of all ages in California. Most are older adults. And these are, again, among the most physically, socially, and financially vulnerable. All are low income and at risk for institutionalization. So here we see the care recipient sample. Our participants range in age from 65 to 94. More than 3/4 are female. About three-fifths of this group are white, about one-fifth are Latina, and the remaining one-fifth includes three African Americans, one Chinese, one Filipina, and one whose race we don't know. And just to give you a sense of their level of need, in the first wave of the home study, more than two-thirds of our recipients needed assistance with at least one activity of daily living, such as bathing or dressing, and all the participants reported needing at least two instrumental activity of daily living assistance, and these are tasks such as housekeeping and doing laundry. More than two-thirds of the care recipients have been receiving IHSS care for more than 3 years, and we even have a couple of individuals enrolled in our study who've been receiving the aging with disability, and they've been receiving IHSS care for more than two decades. The caregivers, we have 20 of them. The average age is 57, overwhelmingly female, and the largest proportion are Latina. Half of this group are related to the care receiver. So all of the interviews were audio taped, transcribed, the data were independently coded, and then we used a line-by-line process to code the data. Then we come together as a team to develop a code list, to group codes into categories, and identify emerging patterns and themes. So given the complex set of complex set of decisions that most of these older adults will soon be facing, we focus much of our early data analysis and collection efforts on understanding more about their information needs and practices. And we're learning that these older adults are getting their information from many different sources. We're also finding that they respond to the information they receive in a host of different ways. But among those who have heard about proposed or impending changes to their benefits, virtually all are expressing some anxiety or concern about any changes being made to the supports on which they rely. And the next set of slides will give you a little bit more of the nuance underlying these findings, and in the words of our participants. So participants are getting information from a variety of both formal and informal sources, including through the mail, through media, newspapers and TV, internet, community meetings, directly from healthcare and social service providers, and quite frequently word of mouth. They're not receiving information from what we're seeing in a very systematic or uniform manner. And sometimes it seems like it's really just happening by chance that they find out about something about one of their benefits. This example from Wilma, she's describing a recent change to electronic-only Social Security payments. And through an informational meeting, she just happened to stop by in her senior housing building. So the information should come to me. The changes were March 1st, and the only way I got it was going downstairs to a meeting, which I didn't know what it was going to be about. But I stayed there, and I listened, and anyway, I got the paperwork. Some of the consumers, and we lost our sound again. It goes off and on. Ooh, it's kind of eerie. So some of our consumers are off and on. Some are more actively engaged, and some are more disengaged. This is very interesting. Here's an example from Liz. She's actually a long-term person with disability. She's a polio survivor, and her health and care needs, she's been an advocate for her own health and care needs, and maybe have to project now more, throughout her adult life. She was also diagnosed with breast cancer about a year ago and remains still very active in monitoring emerging changes to her medical care and social supports. She recently started hearing about impending changes, this impending transition to managed care, and here's what she had to say about it. They want to shove us on managed care, and we would have no choice who would come into our homes and be taking care of us. I have a grave concern about the changes that are coming. I went to a meeting several weeks ago and spoke to the man who was heading it for my county, and I told him how I felt, how long I have been living independently. And to have someone step in, you know, and say, this is what we are going to do, forget it, just put me in an institution. That's how strongly I feel about it. Other of our participants are less proactive on their own, but they get help from their family members and caregivers and other advocates. And this is especially important for folks who have additional barriers to getting information, such as visual or cognitive impairment, limited English proficiency, or low health literacy. And then we have those consumer participants who are more passive and resigned. Some don't have anyone to help them sift through all the information that comes through. And Fran here, who has no advocate, describes her approach when she receives news about cuts to her benefits. I don't call them if they cut. If they cut, I don't want to go through a battle. They don't tell you, they don't give you a reason or something. That's okay, because everybody can hear all the budget cuts. Everybody can give you that answer. So I don't bother. As far as you tell me how much, I get how much, that's good enough for me. However, we're hearing over and again that any information that's coming about changes to their medical care providers, or possibly to the way that they're going to get their home care, whether they can go to a social adult day center, which has recently changed, it's actually CBAD. These are all things that raise a lot of anxiety for these folks who are already struggling with multiple chronic conditions and many challenges. Margaret, the example here, is legally blind. She suffers from arthritis and heart disease, and has put together a very strong network of family and friends who keep her living independently at home. But she started to hear about possible changes to her medical care. She started to get worried. I'm a little concerned with all the changes that are going on. I have to get my pacemaker checked regularly, and I asked if this would make a difference in my care. I have heard that if you have both Medicare and Medi-Cal and you do not have an accompanying insurance policy, you'll be dropped. So the other thing, which perhaps I didn't point out, is we don't know if they're getting good information or not, but whatever it is, it's the perception that's the most important piece here, because whether it's factual or not, misinformation, these are the feelings that evokes. Another example is here. Angie relies completely on her daughter, Julia, to manage all of the information about her medical and in-home supportive services benefits. Angie is 77. She's a monolingual Spanish-speaking woman who has Parkinson's disease. Her daughter, Julia, is concerned about these possible changes that they've been hearing about. We are worried because there will be a change, I think in 2013 or 2014, for Medicare patients, which we will go on to health plans. I'm worried that because of her condition, she needs to go to the physician, especially the hospital doctors. Some doctors don't have any health plans, so I'm worried now. I found out through some letters from Medi-Cal, and also I was receiving brochures from the health nurses. I think it's the following year they need to be assigned to a plan. The information just is in English. So, I'm getting my 2 minutes. Good. So consumers who are highly engaged with information about changes to their benefits, or are fortunate enough to have family members or others assisting them, may be the best equipped to prepare and to make informed choices as the managed care transition rolls out. But those who are not as engaged, and perhaps as a result of current health conditions, behavioral health issues, physical isolation, or the lack of having some additional support, may be less successful in this transition that's coming up. So simply disseminating information is really not sufficient to ensure the continuity that this whole initiative is aspiring to achieve for this really vulnerable population. And the realization of better coordinated care is largely going to depend on the extent to which these consumers are well informed about their options and what's coming down the road and what do I need to do, and consulting or having some assistance with that. So given the fragile state of the physical, mental, and social health and ongoing day-to-day challenges already experienced by these consumers, the rollout of this major transition to managed care requires careful thought and planning. I know the state is doing a lot of that very intensively with big groups of stakeholders, and they're really trying to figure out the best ways to do outreach and education to get to this population in time before this happens. Early findings presented here, I think, highlight the importance of implementing targeted and tailored communication efforts. And these consumers must have sufficient information, time, and additional support available to make informed decisions that best serve their needs and interests and preferences. The model of patient navigation that's being implemented under the Affordable Care Act might provide one model that should be considered here. For example, community health workers or other navigators might target those consumers who do not actively select a new primary care provider and follow up once they've been enrolled into this program, because it may indicate that this is a consumer that really is not fully informed about their options under the new plan. And to sum up, this transition to managed care has a lot of promise, and we know that these consumers have been for many years managing within a very fragmented system, if you call it a system, with often inconsistent results. And the goal is to improve continuity of care and improve their health outcomes. However, targeted and tailored information, and maybe in some cases an actual in-person assistance, I think may be critical to this group of very vulnerable older adult consumers. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. We'll go ahead and take questions.
Yes,
four of the eight transition counties.
Four of the eight, what's that question?
Yes.
How many of them were eight?
In this wave.
Are you
yes, we are. So actually, the timing is everything, right? So when we proposed this project, we were hoping to capture the before and after of this transition. But the starting gate keeps going forward, which is, in my humble opinion, is good for the consumers and for this whole process, because for the very reasons that I'm bringing to the slides today. But what that means is we are continuing to document. We have two more rounds of interviews to complete with this wave. About half of our participants now were in the previous wave, so we are hopeful that we'll be able to continue to follow this group after the transition, because I think that's really when we're going to have an opportunity to see who fares well under this, who's not, and what do we need to do to step it up and respond and fix things on the ground before they run away from us, you know. And there are a lot of lessons from the transition among the SPD group. So I know the state's looking, they're thinking through that experience and trying to be more responsive this time around, which, of course, I think is really great. Other questions or comments? Other states that are having dual demonstration programs? There are about 26, I think, that are developing and implementing some form of this type of program. Thank you.
Let me ask you another question.
Oh, sure.
So you're asking the family caregivers questions too,
right?
Right. And you said they were paid at ages.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But only, I think, four allow responsible family members to take care of the spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet you most of those are in the category of California. And I wonder, are you asking about anything about what the ability to get paid means?
That was my dissertation. Seriously, I studied paid family caregivers. So we can talk about that. It's very interesting, the motivation to get into these roles. The reality is that most of these folks, if not all of them, are already providing care, and many of them are part of a low-income household themselves. So often the IHSS workers, paid or not, are, poverty wages. This is a way that they can do what they want to do for their family member, still manage to keep the household afloat. Not that it's big bucks, as you probably know. I mean, $8 an hour up to maybe 14 in San Francisco an hour. Is it more, 15? Is it a little less? Yeah. So, I mean, it's a really low wage, and each consumer is assessed for a certain number of hours, and typically the workers, in order to piece together a real job, have to work for multiple clients and hop around. So, anyway, that's another talk. Other comments, thoughts, questions? Thank you.
So I'd like to thank all the speakers for great presentations, and I think that what we've seen is across the board several different perspectives and all
somehow interfacing each other and connecting each other and really allowing us to really consider more critically, you know, with under impending changes, how we can better assess and really address the needs of the most vulnerable older adults, these dual eligibles in California. So we actually are finishing up with great time. I'd like to open the floor up for any additional questions, also for the previous presenters. We have about 2 to 3 minutes remaining, so let's take advantage of what's left before you head on out to lunch. So are there any other questions for any other the speakers? Do you guys have comments? Great. Okay, go ahead.
So I only have 2 minutes, so I don't know if I can keep it to that. In 1995, the National Academy of Sciences released a report that said that the existing, which was the same now, federal poverty level was really antiquated and insensitive to the needs of the population in general. So that was 1995, so that was 20 years ago almost. The Census Bureau has developed a supplemental poverty level, which does vary by housing costs only at the MSA level. It's available from the Census Bureau, but it's not used for anything. So there's been 40, 50 years of attempts to try to influence government sort of from the top down to say, oh, we should do something different. And so the Elder Economic Security Standard initiative is actually a national initiative, which is more of a grassroots, so more like tobacco control, right? So when you went to FDA and Congress and said, oh, we should regulate tobacco, that didn't work because there were too many forces arrayed against changing the laws. But when you started at the local level, started with agencies and communities and states, kind of bubbled up. And so that's my analogy with the elder indexes. So there's a national initiative to try to get localities and states to adopt it, and then hopefully it'll build up and get more included at the federal level. So there are 20 states with active coalitions on this. And California 2 years ago passed a law requiring the Elder Index to be used for planning by AAA. So there's also some movement to get it incorporated in state laws.
So any other questions, comments? Excellent. Let's go ahead and give a round of applause to all the speakers. Thank you so much.